What's going on, guys? It's Chris Mead over the D2CX Exceptional E-Commerce Podcast. Got a special guest today, my boy Patrick Schwarzenegger. Thanks for coming on, taking the time. Really, really, really do appreciate it. Thanks for coming on.
Of course. Any time, thank you for having me. I've become a big fan of yours throughout the last few years on Twitter. I know in LinkedIn we've connected, and a big fan of what you've done and how you built your company. So I'm glad to be here.
Appreciate that big time. Thanks so much, though. I know I want to get right into it. You've created Mosh. How long has it been? 5 months?
6 months? 5 months. Five months.
Okay.
Right now.
Cool.
Yeah.
So,
and we've actually only we've only been in stock for about, we've only actually been running the company properly for about 3 months. So
yeah, I want to get into it. A lot of learning lessons, I'm sure. 5 months. How long was it something in the back of your mind that you wanted to do? When did the brainchild come about? Talk to me about that. Ideation, how long it took to launch.
This has been in the plans for about 10 years, over 10 years. And I'm not saying Mosh specifically, but when I think about my career and I think about my vision of where I want to go, I have it very clearly mapped out. So for my later teenage years and my early 20s, it was always about, for me, I was a struggling customer. I was looking for better for you health and wellness alternatives, living with my family and with my dad, who was so crazy about what we were allowed to have in our freezer and our fridge and our pantry. And it made me this customer that wanted to go out there and seek and search for better for you health and wellness alternatives. When my parents split up and I moved with my mom, and we lived next to the grocery store, and I would start buying groceries for us, that's where I kind of started to look at where are these better for you health and wellness companies. At that time, there was a company called Blaze Pizza that was starting, and they wanted to be kind of crowned as the healthier Pizza Hut, and following the Domino's and following the craze of Chipotle and Subway, where customers were allowed to visualize and see the ingredients and know that it was transparent and things were getting made in front of them. So I invested in that company. That company grew like a rocket ship from zero to 380 stores in the matter of a few years. And I was learning so much during that, but that's kind of where I thought to myself, okay, let me spend these next few years. Let me go and help different early stage companies and young entrepreneurs that were trying to provide Americans with these healthier, better for you alternatives. And if this is successful, let me go and learn as much as I can from different entrepreneurs, find the foundation for our manufacturing, for our 3PLs, learn about what it is for direct consumer marketing, the customer acquisition costs, all this different stuff that I can gain all the knowledge. And then I'll take that and go and start our own brands around individuals that I know. So when I say that we've known that we were going to do this for 10 years, it's just phase two of my career, which is now going and starting and owning a larger percentage of companies that continue to speak to the better for your health and wellness space.
It makes sense. It makes complete sense. So how long did it take you to actually get from the ingredient to the final product?
Yes.
I'm sure you're trying out today.
Yeah, I didn't answer your question really. That was up there. But so, like I said, 10 years was where I wanted to get to this spot. Mm-hmm. Mosh specifically, it took over a year. It took over a year from, it's hard to say if this was the norm, because we started this company during the height of the pandemic. I moved back home with my mom in March of 2020. And that's when I kind of had excess time, and I was living with her, and I was seeing what she was eating and her pain points and how she really wanted to educate consumers about brain health. Mm-hmm. And that's when we were like, let's do this. We're together. We're living together. I can help you. You can help me. Let's start this company. It was extremely difficult to start during COVID, dealing with manufacturers, R&D specialists, trying to get the ingredients in from overseas. All of that took so much time, and everything was like this through Zoom. So we were working with the kitchens and the R&D people in three different locations. We weren't allowed to go in there, because this was at the time, no one knew about what COVID was and stuff. So yeah. It took a solid year to get actual like branding down, product in hand, something we were comfortable with. And right before we were going to launch, we had to sever ties with our co-man. That was a huge blow to us. I mean, that was a big sunk cost, and added about another 6 months to go and find new manufacturing. And yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. So when you were looking to make the product, what's the team look like today? I've personally invested in a protein gummy bear company. And a year ago, I got a pitch off LinkedIn and shared like you do every day. This is a badass idea. In an old month, I'm seeing some protein gummy bears. Yeah, talk to us about that day to day. you're on the road all the time, talking about pre-recording your travel plans. How does that work?
Yeah. So our team for the first year of actually kind of creating the product and creating the brand and the brand identity and everything, there was no employees. I mean, it's just me. I don't take a dollar from the company. I don't pay myself, you know, so it was just me and then my mom. And then we did hire someone to help with our branding and with building out our website, but they weren't fixed costs. They weren't an employee. Mm-hmm. Right before we launched, we hired someone that would help with operations and then someone that helped on marketing. So we have two employees as of today. We're lean, mean. I'm just a big believer of this first year. Let's really try to find product market fit. Let's really try to learn from our customers what's going well, what's not. Let's have all the screw ups that we've already been having of out of stock and flavor issues and supply chain issues, all this stuff while we're still a small team. I don't want to go and pour a bunch of money into inventory, performance marketing and employees while there's still bugs to be kind of fixed. So that was kind of my thesis with it. I'm glad that we stuck to that.
Absolutely. It's like you're in a fortunate situation where you could under forecast your inventory, be sold out, and you're still going to be fine, right? And most entrepreneurs, how quickly can I start paying myself a dollar? Because I'm living off my life savings. Or right. Pull before we're okay out. I need cash immediately. Otherwise, I'm going back to that job I hate. So yeah, how did you forecast your inventory?
Well, we didn't do it properly. I'll tell you that. First off, you know, I understand that different individuals are in different, you know, areas of life, financially, socially, physically, et cetera. So this wasn't my end all be all. So I understand that for most entrepreneurs like you, this is your every single second, every single day, 24/7. I mean, I work on Mosh every single day, but while I was launching this company, I was out in Atlanta filming, you know, working night shoots and during the days working on Mosh, and I was averaging not enough sleep, said my Whoop. But to get back to what you were saying of how fast you need to get a dollar in your pocket and manage inventory, you know, when you're starting a company and you're putting all of your savings into it and this is your everything, I mean, you got to kind of start slow. You have to kind of mentally prepare yourself for this isn't a quick fix. This isn't a cash flow game of I'm going to make a bunch of money right away. A lot of these startups and specifically in the CPG space, you know, you're not EBITDA positive for a long time. You know, we've had a few months that we've been EBITDA positive and it's been like, holy crap, that's insane, right? Especially when you're going into retail and there's the net 30 and you're not getting paid till further down the road and you're having to put money up front to pay the kitchen or the co-mans. It's not favorable terms for the entrepreneur. So I think you really have to A, kind of start small, B, buckle up mentally to know that you're not going to make a profit right up front, that it is an investment, or it's called an investment for a reason because you're investing in the future of the company and yourself. And yeah, I mean, direct to consumers has changed a lot of that, you know, that allowed people to get cash in quicker and it allowed them to take out a lot of the middleman and they could fulfill it themselves. They could ship themselves. They could make the product themselves if they wanted to. So yeah, I don't think there's a right playbook of how quick you need to get your first dollar back.
Of course. It's tough, man. I remember when COVID started, we were 25,000 crossheads back ordered.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just trying to manage the customer service, it's so terrible because on one end you want like keep selling because the money's addicting and it's feeding your lifestyle.
You're right.
And it's building your company. At the other end, it's like enough is enough. You can't have customers waiting 3 or 5 months.
No, I know. And we had that. We had that because you know, we made the conscious decision of not raising money before launching. We did this self-financed, self-funded, my mother and I. Yeah. And we wanted to really, you know, before going out and asking friends and family for money or something like that to believe in us, we wanted to really believe in ourselves and to prove out that there was a audience and a user base that was interested in this. So when we launched, you know, for us, we put in a 6-figure purchase order. That's significant for me. And
that's a lot of money. Yeah, you
know, me and my mom, who has never done anything in the food and beverage space. So she didn't really know what was happening. So I was like, this is a good start. You know, we're not spending money on a big PR team. We're not spending money on performance marketing. Like, let's just go out with our user base and with who we know and see what we sell. So we started too small. We went out and launched. And in the first few days, we sold through all of those inventory, the whole thing. You know, we did over 6 figures in the day and it was like so happy. And then part of me was like, oh my God, but we're going to be out of inventory. Let me call the co-man. Okay, it's 8 weeks for ingredients. we're going to be out of inventory for 8 weeks. And she was like, okay, well, there's always two ways to look at everything. The good, the bad news is, you know, we're out, but the good news is we sold out. We did a really great job, and maybe that'll create some hype. And if it happens once, it's fine. If it happens multiple times, then customers will get mad. And I was like, yeah, you're right. So that's what we did. And we bounced back and went from there.
That's wild. Was that first initial drop, was there any performance behind it, or is it just word of mouth and through your guys' network?
No. So what we did was we created this, I kind of did like a little bit of a marketing plan before launch, where we allowed customers, different people, to give us their emails in anticipation of our launch. And they got access to shop the product before everybody else did. And if you gave us your email, we picked a certain amount of people to get free Mosh bars for the full year. So it incentivized people to give us their emails before launch. Then what we did was we launched to only those people for the first 48 hours. I would say we sold probably 50% of our full inventory just to them. And then we went and did like a Forbes article and put it out on our socials, and we sold the rest.
That's crazy. That's such a crazy feeling. In hindsight, it's better to be sold out than having bars collect dust and they're sitting there and your cash sitting there. So
yeah, that's a whole other thing of inventory financing and planning that you have to do when it comes to food, especially in the beginning. You have maybe, let's say, a year shelf life, but food really starts to be affected within 3-6 months. I remember talking with Peter Rahal from RX, and he was like, look, the best thing you can do is just like, I would go with lower production quantities and do them more often so that the bars are as fresh as possible, because you learn things about the ingredients and how they interact chemically and stuff over the course of time. So when you're in food and beverage, it's a little bit different than when you have a crossnet, yeah. You know, something like that. It's not like your net's going to expire in a year or 2 years. You know?
That's a good point. Yeah, we're doing the same thing over here. It used to be, hey, we'll put 2 big purchase orders in, right, and then go to warehouse, and there'd be 15,000 that's sitting there. I'm like, I could be using this money for my employees, for marketing. What am I doing? So now what we're doing is 6 turns a year. I should be getting an inventory every 2 months, the goal internally. And since we've been doing that model, so there's so much money to be like running the business. Collecting dust is just, we always just wanted to make as much inventory as for inventory's sake, is just in case something pops up, but it's a bad way to run a company.
Yeah, I mean, things have progressed, you know, in the marketplace with allowing, you know, inventory financing and different lines of credits and stuff like that to younger and newer entrepreneurs. And obviously the rates fluctuate a lot, but at least there's some sort of alternatives besides just equity financing and stuff.
Exactly. Well, what would you say was the biggest lesson you've learned so far in the early days of being an entrepreneur?
Oh man. So I think the biggest thing was, you know, like I said, I really had this whole path I thought I had of like learn for the first 5 to 10 years from all these different brands. And so that I could soak up as much information to go and launch my brand perfectly, you know? And it's just, there is no real roadmap. I mean, yes, success leaves clues. You could learn a lot from a lot of people, but there's no perfect way to do things. And there's always going to be stuff that goes wrong. I mean, in hindsight, I wish that we didn't spend so much time trying to perfect our formula and our product and our branding and everything, because we learned what customers liked and didn't like from when we actually launched. And before that, it was just kind of a internal opinion of myself and my mom. And I wish we had utilized the community and other people more so before launch, or had launched earlier, because you just never know what other people are going to think or how they're going to react. So I think that was kind of the biggest learning for me. And if I were to redo it, I would have launched right away and taken feedback right away and continued to progress and evolve the product, rather than spending so much time and stuff of launching it, especially when you're a young entrepreneur that's out there, that's, this is your everything and you need cash quicker and stuff. Like, just get it out there and take the feedback and bring the customer along the journey. I think that they're really rooting for you and want to see you make the changes, and they're willing to give you feedback. And yeah.
It makes a lot of sense. And good thing the customer seemed to like it. I've seen like almost 600 positive reviews and like 4 months. That's literally unheard of.
It's great, but we had our flaws, man. We had people that didn't like it, or that got certain product during when we first launched September, when there was a heat wave and certain products melted and changed. And like I said, we had a flavor funk with one of ours, and some people didn't like that, which we understood, and it was on us. So we had to fix those things. So
won't be the last step.
No,
it certainly won't be the last step. In COVID, we were rushing, and we just got Walmart to agree to a 10,000 unit purchase order, our biggest thing in company history. We had to rush production to meet the deadline, and we started working with a new volleyball factory. We got the boxes in. We put them on the shelves. We found out that every ball would not inflate.
Yeah.
Every single ball would not inflate. And it was just an absolute nightmare. And luckily, nobody from Walmart ever called us or never emailed us. Nobody ever noticed. But the customers would come to us and, hey, I bought this at Walmart, and I just have to go send them a brand new ball.
Yeah.
It was a nightmare.
No, I always think the customer's king. You know, people used to say cash is king, but I think customer's king, and making sure, you know, so many brands spend so much money on acquiring customers rather than spending money on keeping customers happy and really investing in keeping customers on. And we're starting to see that more so, but that was a big goal of mine and a big thing with my mom and I was like, okay, any of these customers that are upset and it's something that's on us or it's a flavor thing, whatever, like, let's make it right.
Yeah.
Whether that's sending them a letter, whether that's apologizing, whether that's refunds, whether that's new product when it comes in, whatever we need to do, you know, that's what we want to do.
Absolutely. That's how you keep them, stay in business and keep growing the business. I would be upset if I didn't ask you this question. How's working with your mom like?
It's great.
With my brother, how's that relationship like?
It's great. You know, it's really fun. It's always really funny when we get into it and banter back and forth about, you know, what to do. She's so smart when it comes to like the messaging and the wording and how to interact with the customer. And then she knows nothing about direct to consumer businesses and CPG. And I know more about that side. So it's kind of like a perfect marriage of us two, of she's great at what she's great at. I'm great at what I'm great at. And we know what we're not good at. And that's where we have kind of the supplemental help from the people that are our employees. But it's really fun. I mean, it's really great for me. It's like a dream come true to make her happy, to make her proud, and to bring her dream to reality, right? She's always wanted to, you know, find ways to continue her mission of ridding the world of Alzheimer's. And she's created, you know, different books, movies, TV shows, coloring books, the Women's Alzheimer's Movement with the Cleveland Clinic. She's had so many different things that after she lost her dad to Alzheimer's. And for me, this was kind of like, let's continue that mission of educating consumers about what they eat and what they drink impacts their brain health and raising money for Alzheimer's, but let's do it with CPG. And so it was like such a fun thing to bring this mission to life.
That's amazing, dude. That's so cool. My mom, she's the chief CrossNet officer. She drives Uber for a living, semi-retired, and she slings CrossNet business cards 8 hours a day. She calls me for a commission at the end of the week, trying to get the CrossNet sales that she brought in.
That's great. Yeah. That's awesome.
I appreciate you joining. Thanks for coming on, man. I know you got a business schedule running around. Thank you so much for sharing your learnings. Like, it's very inspirational what you're doing. You've always been giving back to the DTC world. People like myself, people look up to you for a long time. So thanks for coming on, man. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate that a lot. And anything I can do to help you, an email, phone call, et cetera, away. And hope this podcast does great things for you. And more importantly, for other people that are out there wanting to learn and hopefully can get something from this.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, man. Thanks so much for coming on. Talk soon.
All right. Later, man.
So that's another episode of My Biggest Lessons. Each and every week, I'll be having one of my favorite entrepreneurs come on, share their stories, their mistakes, the things they wish they knew. Entrepreneurship's a lonely road, right? You only learn by getting better. You only learn by making mistakes. So I want them to come on and share their stories. If you have somebody in mind that you want on, drop a comment, subscribe, share with a friend. Let's get the best people in the world on here. Thanks for listening.